That was Bob Marley and the Wailers with Get Up, Stand Up, and you're listening to The Circled A Show on Resonance. My name's Jane, and I'm covering for Your Debt today, and I'm here with my friend Alan.
Hello.
On today's show, we're going to be talking about the relationship between music and radical politics.
Yes, we are. The first song you heard there was The Scent by Bob Mould, which isn't a particularly political song, but I wanted to play that just as a kind of really upbeat number.
It's a good opener. It's a good opener.
Yes, it is. It's a very strong one.
I suppose the message we're pushing today is you can't take politics too seriously in music.
Yes, otherwise it just gets very, very tedious.
So the Wailers track was my choice, and I chose that because it's a brilliant protest song. You can play it in any situation, it always works. It was originally released on the Wailers album Burning in 1973, and was apparently written after he toured Haiti in the early 70s and was horrified by the really terrible conditions that he saw. And you mentioned earlier that you've been reading about the Haitian Revolution, so...
Yes, I have a C.L.R. James, the great guy, read his book about Toussaint Louverture, if I could pronounce that very badly. Read that, and his book on cricket as well, which is arguably better, but maybe not suited to this show.
The Venn diagram crossover just keeps getting bigger and bigger. So we're going to play Bob Dylan now, not Bob Marley, with Only a Pawn in Their Game.
A bullet from the back of a bush took Medgar Evers' blood. A finger fired the trigger to his name. A handle hit out in the dark. A hand set the spark. Two eyes took the aim behind a man's brain. But he can't be blamed. He's only a pawn in their game. The South politician preaches to the poor white man. You got more than the blacks, don't complain. You're better than them, you've been born with white skin, they explain. And the Negro's name is used, it is plain, for the politician's gain. As he rises to fame, and the poor white remains on the caboose of the train. But it ain't him to blame, he's only a pawn in their game. The deputy sheriffs, the soldiers, the governors get paid. And the marshals and cops get the same. But the poor white man's used in the hands of them all like a tool. He's taught in his school from the start by the rule that the laws are with him to protect his white skin, to keep up his hate, so he never thinks straight about the shape that he's in. But it ain't him to blame, he's only a pawn in their game. From the poverty shacks, he looks from the cracks to the tracks. And the hoofbeats pound in his brain. And he's taught how to walk in a pack, shoot in the back with his fist in a clinch. To hang and to lynch, to hide neath the hood, to kill with no pain, like a dog on a chain. He ain't got no name, but it ain't him to blame. He's only a pawn in their game. Today Medgar Evers was buried from the bullet he caught. They're lowering him down as a king. But when the shadowy sun sets on the one that fired the gun, he'll see by his grave, on the stone that remains, carved next to his name, his epitaph plain, only a pawn in their game.
That was Bob Dylan with Only a Pawn in Their Game. It was written in 1963 about the assassination of Medgar Evers, who's a civil rights activist by a white supremacist, whose name I haven't written down because obviously he's not important. A lot of big names wrote songs about about Evers' death, including Nina Simone, who wrote Mississippi Goddamn about it, and Phil Oakes also wrote Too Many Martyrs about it. And more recently, Immortal Technique also name-checks Evers on Crossing the Boundary as well. But we were just talking about death of Trayvon Martin while the track was playing.
Well, yeah, there's obviously racial parallels there as well. I was just wondering, were we wondering if Beyonce and Jay-Z were going to write a song about it? Because we were just commenting that, you know, Stevie Wonder and now Jay-Z and Kanye West are boycotting Florida.
Does that mean no orange juice? I'm just trying to work out what the full implications.
Well, it means they're not going to play Florida.
No Orlando Studios. Well, yeah.
No Disneyland
playing.
For them.
No.
But we're talking about music and politics. It's almost the artist's role to kind of make statements outside of their music rather than actually writing songs about it. You just kind of come out with a big celebrity statement, which I guess has effect, but. That's an interesting parallel between then and now.
Yeah, I mean, I chose the Dylan track because I think it kind of transcends the protest song label, because it's quite a heavy Marxist analysis if you listen to the lyric closely, while the Phil Oakes song focuses purely on the events of Medgar Evers' life and death. Dylan uses his song to point out the power structures behind each aspect of Medgar Evers' death. And although I love a bit of Phil Oakes, I find that when I compare the two songs, I can really see why Dylan apparently threw Ox out of a taxi, saying, "You're not a songwriter, you're a reporter."
So, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, you know, I don't know. I think,
Let the audience make its own mind up.
Well, they definitely
think about that,
they
Bob.
Definitely did in yeah they definitely did in the Phil versus Bob situation. Next up, we've got another countryist track, which is Loretta Lynn with The Pill.
You whined me and dined me when I was your girl. Promised if I'd be your wife, you'd show me the world. But all I've seen of this old world is a bed and a doctor bill. I'm tearing down your brooder house, 'cause now I've got the pill. All these years I've stayed at home while you had all your fun. And every year that's gone by, another baby's come. There's gonna be some changes made right here on Nursery Hill. You set this chicken your last time, 'cause now I've got the pill. This old maternity dress I've got is going in the garbage. The clothes I'm wearing from now on won't take up so much yardage. Mini skirts, hot pants, and a few little fancy frills. Yeah, I'm making up for all those years since I've got the pill. I'm tired of all your crowing, how you and your hens play. While holding a couple in my arms, another's on the way. This chicken's done tore up her nest, and I'm ready to make a deal. And you can't afford to turn it down, 'cause you know I've got the pill. This incubator is overused, because you kept it filled. The feeling good comes easy now, since I've got the pill. It's getting dark, it's roosting time, tonight's too good to be real. Oh, but daddy, don't you worry none, 'cause mama's got the pill. Oh, daddy, don't you worry none, 'cause mama's got the pill.
That was Loretta Lynn with The Pill. I was just saying to Alan while the track was playing, that one was a really fun song to research because I originally thought it was written by someone else. And when I was researching it this afternoon, I found out she actually wrote it herself under a pen name.
Ah, so, what was the pen name?
Have I written that down? Loreen Allen.
Loreen
was,
Allen.
That was her pen name. I thought it's such a unexpected place to find such a essentially radically feminist song.
Yeah. We kind of think with country, you know, you've got the Stetsons and the kind of, you know, that scene in...
the Republican kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, the scene in Blues Brothers where they play no Hank Williams songs. And it's, yeah, to find something a bit more kind of radical and all about women's liberation is, yeah, there's more to the genre than first meets the eye.
It was held back for 3 years after she recorded it because the record company were obviously worried about adverse responses, and it was indeed banned by a number of radio stations at the time. Although another thing I found out today when I was researching it was that Lynn said in an interview with the Playgirl magazine, which isn't particularly feminist, that she had been congratulated by a number of rural doctors. He said that the song had done more to highlight the availability of contraception in rural isolated areas than all the public health literature they'd released. It's also worth bearing in mind that The Pill had been available in America since 1960, so the fact that it was still such a radical full-on subject sort of 15 years later tells you sort of the direction that things were moving in. Do you want to introduce our next song?
Yes, the next song we're going to play is, I'm sure you know it, is The Clash of Guns of Brixton. I just thought it was topical now, and not only for the show, but because of what's going on in Brixton, the whole gentrification.
What isn't going on in Brixton?
Well, yeah, what isn't going on in Brixton? Yeah, I guess you're right. With the whole gentrification around Foxtons and Brixton Village and a kind of armed response to bailiffs the other week.
And the huge eviction as well. Was it Salford that had the banner outside Foxtons in Brixton?
I expect it was them, yeah. It's normally them.
It's normally them. Yeah, apparently the staff had to go home, which is pretty cool. But anyway, this is Guns of Brixton by The Clash.
Your hands on your head.
That was The Clash with Guns of Brixton. We're just talking about squatting while the track was playing. Slightly.
Welcome to Resonance.
Yeah, slightly distracting. Another thing I always really enjoy about that track is I tend to forget that it was written and released before both of the riots in Brixton. I don't know, did Paul Simonon have great foresight or was it inspiration?
Maybe he was just... looking forward to it. I mean, it's now Gun singular of Brixton, isn't it?
The Gun of Brixton.
Do you hear about that, Cheney, the whole chasing the bailiffs out?
I did hear about that. Yeah. It was quite exciting news coming out of Brixton. The thing is that I think the guy was charged in the last few days, because that was what I found out when I was Googling it. But it doesn't actually tell you anything about what his situation was, whether he was a local authority tenant or, why he was being evicted, what the rent arrears were, whatever. So it's kind of hard to perhaps take as hard a line as one might wish to on that topic. But I think coming up next, we're going to play Gil Scott-Heron with Johannesburg. But we're not sure how much of the track we're going to play because it's almost 6 minutes long.
Yeah, if you get annoyed by flute solos, just phone in and we'll cut it short.
We'll cut it off. But here's Gil Scott-Heron.
Yeah, now, sometimes distance brings misunderstanding.
Johannesburg. I really, really, really love that song. Yeah. I really wanted to play it because I have an anecdote, or a dadecdote, as I call it, because I'm pretty sure it came from my dad. He denies it, but I'm pretty sure it's true, which is that Gil Scott-Heron went to South Africa at the end of apartheid and rented an open bed truck so that he could ride around the townships playing this track. And he was really confused because everyone just looked at him with blank faces because the song had been banned because of apartheid, so no one knew it. But I haven't been able to fact check that, so that totally might not be true.
I think it's true. I mean, I'd like to
think
it's
true. It sounds true, doesn't it?
I mean, it definitely would have been banned, we'll put it like that.
And you just told me something which, unfortunately, also sounds true.
Yeah, I mean, Gil Scott-Heron's a very interesting man, very political man. A lot of his poems and his songs are about politics and stuff. But he also has a slightly uncomfortable one called The Subject Is Faggots, which is him standing outside a gay nightclub. If you're on his side, he's confronting his homophobia. If you're not on his side, he's being homophobic. And it's quite a difficult poem, and it's difficult to kind of place it in his oeuvre and kind of to confront it when you also know Gil Scott-Heron said such wonderful things, such as on that song. Johannesburg, not...
Unfortunately, this is radio, so TV, so you can't actually see my completely shocked and appalled face hearing this anecdote. I can barely believe that it's true. We're coming towards the end of the show. The next track is Alan's choice.
Yes, it's going to play a song by The Replacements. I'd like to play them because they're essentially a punk band coming out of Minneapolis. And I just think... Well, you can start off playing punk rock, and it means that you can get away playing three chord songs, and anyone can do it. And Replacement started doing that, and then realised, why not be better than that? And even though they are a bunch of drunks, it's kind of inspiring that they can do something as schmaltzy as this song.
Everyone's looking forward.
Yeah, it was Replacements with Kiss Me on the Bus. It will be found on the worst album title ever, which is called Tim.
We were discussing that earlier as well. That definitely is one of the most amusing album titles I've ever heard. Also, Sleigh Bells in the background.
Yes, why not?
I tentatively asked, was it a hi-hat? Hopeful.
No, no, it's Sleigh Bells. It's Sleigh Bells.
Anyway, I've been Janie, this is Alan. We've been on the Circle A show and we're going to say goodbye with a track by Captain Hot Knives called I'm an Anarchist Squat Band, Punk Band, to try and bring the theme all back together again.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm in an anarchist squat punk band. I'm in an anarchist squat punk band. I'm in an anarchist squat punk band. Drive around in a knackered old van. I'm in an anarchist squat punk band. I'm in an anarchist squat punk band. I'm in an anarchist squat punk band. Drive around in a knackered old van. We always have a ska bit in our songs. We always have a ska bit in our songs. It's bit when drummer's rest. It's bit that drummer likes best. It's bit when he changes vests. And if he don't, he gets depressed. We always have a ska bit in our songs. I'm in an anarchist squat punk band. I'm in an anarchist squat punk band. I'm in an anarchist squat punk band. Drive around in a knackered old van. Our carbon footprint is bigger than NASA. But we are always wishing our van would go faster. We went to liberate.